This is Martin from Hyborian. You're listening to Sonic Perspectives. Rock on.
Hello everyone, and welcome to another interview of Sonic Perspectives. I'm Rodrigo Altaf, and in these coronavirus times, we're all trying to keep safe and sane. And thank God that metal is still in no short supply, as opposed to toilet paper. Today, I'll bring you a new band to listen to, because my guest is the whole band, Hyborian. Guys, it's great to have you here with us.
What's going on, how you? It's up here.
I'm here in Toronto, where people are just going crazy and buying stuff in bulk in every supermarket, but so far so good. Let's start by introducing the whole band. I have Martin Bush here on vocals, guitar, and synths, Ryan Bates on guitar, vocals, and bass, and Justin Ripetto on drums, right?
That's right.
All right. So tell us, Hyborian is a relatively new band, and at the moment the core of the band is a trio. How did you guys meet, and why are you still maintaining that format?
Basically, we've all kind of been musicians around Kansas City area for a while, and we were all kind of bouncing around in other projects, doing other things, and decided we wanted to do something, you know, kind of heavy and kind of what we, more or less what we wanted to do, and so we decided to start Hyborian, and Martin was kind of, me and Justin were kind of in a band before and decided to, that we needed somebody else. So we got Martin and called him up, met him at the bar. It's like, hey man, you want to do something heavy? He's like, hell yeah. So, and that's how it started.
Right. With a name like that, I guess you're probably influenced by Robert E. Howard, who created the whole universe called the Hyborian Age. Am I right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And how long did it take you guys to develop what you are today? I mean, I hear a lot of High on Fire in your sound, Mastodon to some extent, Baroness. But at the same time, in my opinion, at least you guys sound heavier and crispier than those bands.
Awesome.
Thank you. Yeah. Awesome.
And I mean, we listen to a ton of different music. Like all of us have kind of slightly different tastes. So it all just kind of combines to be what we are. So I'm not porridge.
Yeah,
we all write together. We don't have like a songwriter or anything like that. Like pretty much anything you're hearing is the three of us creating it, you know?
Right. Another aspect I love about this band is the drums. I only listened to the second album so far, but I like that there's absolutely no signs of programmed drumming anywhere. Am I right?
Yeah, no, there's no programmed drumming. I don't play double bass either. So I just, you know, kind of supplement like a lot of the fast rhythmic stuff with hand, just, you know, toms and hand stuff with just, you know, fast single kick, I guess, you know.
And I haven't seen you guys live yet, but I imagine that you use massive drums in John Bonham style, right? Is that the case?
Yeah. It's pretty much the drum kit that I play is pretty much the John Bonham setup as far as sizes go. I play a 24-inch bass drum, whereas John Bonham played like a 26-inch, but the toms are all the same sizes as John Bonham played. So, yeah, they're big drums,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, and you guys have a little bit of an unusual setup because the two guitar players, Ryan and Martin, both sing. How did you guys reach the conclusion that two singers would be the way to go, and how do you split the vocal duties, the vocal harmonies and melodies and so on?
I mean, really, Martin is more of the, technically, I guess you could say more of the lead vocalist because he's done it. He's had the most experience doing that in the past. And I've always kind of been a backup guy for the majority of the stuff and mainly just a guitar player. But this man, I wanted to kind of do more vocal stuff and be there. And so kind of more or less just kind of comes naturally. You know, we just kind of hear it. And, you know, Marty is good about writing his vocal lines kind of write themselves as far as for the harmonies and backups and the ideas that kind of spin off of it, just kind of allows me to add what I can. You know, I'm getting, it's more work in progress at the moment, but it's just fun. And it's just, we think it adds a little more to the sound. And
you know, previous to Hyborian, to the band that Ryan was in before, he did some backing vocals and stuff in it. And like going to see them play and stuff like that, I was like, man, you should sing more. And like you should take a more prominent role in the vocals. And So when we started playing together, that was something that was really important to me personally, was to get him way more involved in the vocals, because he's, you know, he's really fucking good at it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we can curse. Sorry.
I played in a band with, well, me and Ryan played in a band before this band. And yeah, I always wanted him to be doing more on the vocals, because that was, you know, people loved, like, oh, yeah, I love it when Ryan sings.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that was definitely it.
Gosh, you guys.
And what's the plan for the bass part? I mean, do you guys see yourself turning into a quartet at some point in time?
I mean, yeah, honestly, it's like we always envisioned it as a four piece. But when we started it, you know, we had a guy, a buddy that we were excited about, and kind of started with him. But, you know, life, he had kids, got married, and did that route. So we've kind of been bouncing around with bass players ever since, and just getting friends to fill in and help out. And it kind of, when we decided to do the first record, we didn't have a timeline, there was no schedule or anything. We just wanted to get a record done and do it. And I just cut the bass on it at that time. And, we had Anthony, who was in, kind of our main bass player there for a while, kind of came on right at the end as we were recording it. You know, and things kind of happen. And again, life gets in the way of things, stuff like that. We find ourselves back as a three piece, and we had a couple of buddies fill in, you know, thus far. But I don't know. We want a quartet, but at the same time, until we find the right guy, I guess, and it makes sense, then we're just going to keep on rocking. Yeah.
I see. And if you guys had to select someone today, what would be the main criteria? How would you go about it? Have you thought about that yet?
I mean, honestly, it's Kansas City, and we're kind of a small market. It's not the biggest. So it's kind of hard, you know, like we got all of our friends. And again, we've been fortunate to find buddies to fill in when necessary. And, you know, trying to find like a permanent guy is just been, it's hard to ask somebody to give up their entire life.
Yeah. Change their lifestyle completely, you know?
Yeah. Well, Jason Newsted is not doing anything at the moment that I know of, so you can ask him, maybe.
Oh, yeah. Dude, that'd be awesome, actually. Call him out. Oh, yeah. Let's get him on the line.
Yeah.
Hey, his new stuff ain't too bad.
I haven't heard Hyborian Volume 1 yet, but how would you compare it to the second album, Volume 2? I only heard the two singles from the first album, As Above, So Below and Maelstrom. In my opinion, I think Volume 2 is a little bit more dynamic than the songs I heard so far.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
So Volume 1, like, you know, those are all songs we wrote, like, right at the beginning of us being a band. We recorded that record ourselves, and then had Justin Mantu at West End Studios mix it for us. So it was you know, we were an independent band. We weren't signed to a label. I think we've just had more time to develop our sound with Volume 2. I think Volume 1, we didn't really push ourselves as hard musically as we did for Volume 2, because if we were still feeling each other out and figuring out what we were capable of as a group, I think we've got a much better idea of that now. So it was easier to write more complicated and more technical things for Volume 2.
At least try to, yeah.
Yeah.
Try to be,
yeah,
a little more progressive, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, for sure.
And, you know,
hopefully. And kind of like the good stuff that we thought we did well on the Volume 1, you know, we tried to emphasize that and kind of work that, you know, make sure that there's plenty of that in there. And then the other stuff was just more like having fun and doing more of stuff that we kind of want to do. Like, I would love to be Dimebag Darrell, but, you know, that's a mighty mountain to climb there. So, you know, you just kind of keep working towards it and keep pushing yourself, yeah, and try to make the next one better than the last.
And it's kind of always been our thing. Like, every song we write, we're trying to write just beyond our ability to play it. And then continue to get better as musicians. So we're always trying to write write things that aren't necessarily the easiest for us at the time to play, but then that pushes us to keep growing as musicians, you know?
And then the playing and singing is yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And tell me about the album cover of Volume 2, which is stunning and scary at the same time, I thought. It was made by an artist called Ettore Del Vigo, right?
Yeah, he's an Italian guy that we literally just found him. Like, we were all sitting around linking the different artists on Instagram and going down the rabbit hole basically. And we found his stuff and we're like, oh my gosh,
yeah,
this is perfect. And we hit him up and we thought it was a long shot because he's a really established,
amazing,
successful artist, you know? And we figured there was no way A, that he would want to work with us, and B, that we would be able to afford him. But he was really cool and allowed us to use that artwork for a very, very reasonable amount of money.
Yeah, it was an oil painting, wasn't it?
It's like he does mixed media. It's like part,
yeah,
some oil paint, some airbrush. But yeah, he's amazing. We're huge, huge fans of all of his work.
We thought it fit the record perfectly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it did. Yeah. I mean, the approach on this cover is very raw compared to the one used for the first album, which has that cosmic feel. But it's the same character on both covers, right?
Yeah.
What's the name of the character?
The Traveler.
And I understand that there's a concept between the two albums that is somehow intertwined, and that you guys are already planning the third album, which will continue the story. Is that true?
Yeah. Basically, we planned it as a trilogy, where the first record is stories that were handed to us by the Traveler about things that happened in ancient human history, like before the advent of writing, basically in the Hyborian Age, like between the fall of Atlantis and the advent of written language. And all of the songs on Volume 1 are not necessarily connected to one another, other than the fact that they happen in that time period. Whereas Volume 2 is a continuous story from front to back, where the songs actually tell a story. We've got a novel that's out right now that goes along with the record and basically tells the same story, just fleshed out a lot more.
The novel is called The Traveler, A Hyborian Tale, right?
Yep.
Is that available with the album or as a standalone? Where can we buy it?
Right now, you can pre-order it from Season of Mist, or you can get it right now at our Big Cartel site, which is hyborian.bigcartel.com.
Okay, I'll check it out. Tell me about the first video from Volume 2 for the song Driven by Hunger. It's a very interesting animation.
That's a really cool story, actually. We were playing at St. Vitus in New York, and this guy walks up to me, and he was like, hey, I'm an animator, and I really like you guys' stuff. I'd like to work with you. Here's a link to my reel and my portfolio. Check it out and let me know. And, you know, we got home from tour, and I hit him up and looked at his stuff, and it was all awesome. His name's Michael Pisano. He works for CNN doing motion graphics stuff. He's got a couple of Emmy nominations under his belt.
Wow.
And we basically just kind of gave him the reins and let him do the thing, and just, you know, told him keep it dark and keep it creepy. And I think he just knocked it out of the park.
He did a great job.
We're really stoked on that video.
Yeah, it's really cool indeed. And another standout track for which you guys made a video is Expanse, which has more of a live feel to it with only the band playing, right?
Yeah.
Was that intention to have two completely different sort of videos, or just by accident?
More or less, that's just kind of what we could
do. Yeah. Yeah.
That's what we worked out.
Yeah.
All right.
We're a small band. We don't have a huge budget. So a lot of the stuff we're doing on our own, or with help from friends and yep, things like that. So it's more, you know, we would love to go make some big budget, crazy music video, but, you know, we kind of do what we can do and try to make it as cool as we can with the resources we have. The local rock venue, the Riot Room here in Kansas City, allowed us to film that in there in an afternoon, which was pretty cool. And that video is actually all filmed on iPhones, which is kind of cool as well.
Yeah. And what kind of gear did you guys use specifically for guitar on this album? Because I think the guitar work is amazingly tight.
Both of us use different rigs. This is Martin talking now. I've got a prototype Flying V. We're not really sure what the deal with it is. We think that it was a prototype made for the Flying V Pro Tees that came out in 2016 from Gibson. But it's the serial number on it is a 2011 serial number. So we think that it was something that they made in the custom shop as a prototype for that guitar a few years before, but we don't really know. But I basically played that through for most of the tracks. We used, you know, odd things for solos and stuff like that. But it was that through a Klon Centaur into an Apex or a New Vintage Apex, which is a one-off amp that the guy at New Vintage made for the studio that we recorded at. And that went through, I've got a late 70s Orange Cab with like the Eminence square magnet speakers in it. And that was pretty much my main rig for the whole thing.
Yeah. And then, we recorded at B24 Studios here in Kansas City. And Gene Abramov, who's basically the owner, and Josh Barber, who's the head cat that runs that place there. Gene has a really nice collection of amps for the studio to use. And we kind of had like a preconceived notion of what we wanted when we went into the studio. We thought, like, I normally live, I'll play my Marshall JCM-900 through an Orange 412 cab. And so I kind of figured I would be using that and another Marshall, because he has a nice selection of old Marshall's Plexis and 800s that have been modded out and stuff. So really cool stuff. And so we kind of thought that was there. And they have a Saldano Slow 100 that Marty initially was eyeing when we were kind of thinking about what we were going to do at the beginning of the record. And so I wasn't even thinking about it. But as we started playing with tones and recording everything, I ended up using the 900 and my the Orange Cab. It might have been a Marshall Cab that they had.
You used my cab.
Okay, so we used the Orange Cab pretty much mainly. And then I used my 900 for like the lead stuff and kind of really just my lead work. And then I ended up with the Saldano Slow 100 and just playing the LTD Phoenix, which is their cheaper. I picked it up online for $200, and for whatever reason, I love it. I swapped out all the pickups and hardware. And the cats here, it's Fountain City, helped whip it into shape, get the frets all leveled out, and the little $200 job's been sounding and playing great, so I kept it, and that's what I used to record it with. And everything worked out really, really well. And then when we recorded, what was awesome is we kind of wanted to do a little more production, I guess. We wanted to like layer guitars and really, was really wanted to dive into that. But Josh stripped it back, and he came at it kind of the opposite and wanted us to just be kind of as raw and as organic as possible. So all the drums and the guitars, everything were cut. That's just my guitar, one amp for me, one for Marty. And, you know, and it was just kind of, that was it. You know, there might be a few parts. There's a few parts we might have did an overdub or something just to make it a little heavier at a moment. But for the most part, it was just real simple, kept it real simple. And I thought it worked out great and sounded great. Yeah,
it did. Sure. Yeah. And I'm curious about one particular track. It's called Planet Destructor, which is probably the song that sounds closer to classic metal on the album, with twin guitar harmonies, thrash metal riffs, and so on. Tell me about that track in particular.
It's my favorite song on the record, for sure.
Mine as well, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm a huge like Bay Area thrash guy. Like, I love DRI and Testament and Exodus, and that one is, and every time we get to it in the set when we're playing live, I'm like, yes. Like, it's the one I enjoy playing the most.
And it has that, like, the intro and outro, like, that mirror each other or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's really cool how it kind of, you know, fades into it and then just riffs heavy the whole time and fades back out, you know?
Yeah. And I like how you guys end things with an 8-minute epic called In the Hall of the Travelers. What can you tell us about that one in particular?
Basically, that's another one of my favorite tracks on the record. So I love how thrashy it starts out. In the book, basically, what's happening at the point where that song's occurring is it's the confrontation at the end of the book, and the universe is like crumbling around the characters, and there's this big fight, and then the universe actually dies. So in that song, we were trying to musically represent that. So that's why it starts off, and everything's like chaotic and thrashy and heavy, and then it like cascades into just everything falling apart and this pretty thing happening, which is basically the universe dying and then molecules starting to coalesce and the universe being reborn. And we feel like that outro that's kind of pretty is the universe like being reborn.
Wow, intense. And what does the narration at the end of that track mean?
That we, on volume one and volume two, we have a lot of hidden messages that you can like look for and decipher. We're really into cryptography, cryptology, however you want to say it.
Okay.
So there's Morse code messages. There's backtracking where, like, that narration at the end, if you play that backwards, we call it the message from the traveler. There's one that is on volume one as well. I'm not going to tell you what it says, but I highly encourage you to flip it around and listen to it backwards.
All right.
Digitally.
Yeah. Or just spin a record backwards too.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I picked up the Morse code at the end. I don't know what it means. I didn't translate, but I did pick up the Morse code at the end of the same track.
Yeah.
Nice. I'll try and translate and get back to you guys eventually. I will. Yeah. And what would you say has been the highest point for the band in this short existence?
Signing with Season of Mist was pretty cool.
That was definitely a milestone.
Playing shows with bands that we love.
Yeah, we got to play with a ridiculous amount of our heroes, which is really cool.
Yeah. Going on tour with Weed Eater was a big highlight.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
That was fun. Those guys are awesome. They're playing in Kansas City tonight.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. One show that hasn't been canceled then. Because everywhere people are canceling.
Those dudes will never cancel a show. I cannot imagine any scenario. Like, there could be nuclear bombs going off, and I bet they would still play a show.
The coronavirus does not affect Weed Eater.
I think that if they got infected by the coronavirus, we could take their blood and vaccinate everybody else in the world with it.
Right. So Volume 2 comes out on March 20th. Where can the fans get it, and what are the formats available?
It's coming out in regular black vinyl, a special edition colored vinyl. There's a special edition that comes with the novel. There's CD, there's cassette, streaming, MP3s online. Basically, the best place to pre-order it right now is just through the Season of Mist website. But I believe Bandcamp, you can also pre-order through there. And basically on the 20th, like, everything will ship. And full streaming will be available. And
yeah. Okay. So, any touring plans that you can disclose at the moment, or is everything at a standstill because of this?
Everything's kind of at a standstill right now. We had some plans that are no longer happening. The only thing that we have right now is the release show on the 20th, and then we're headlining Grim Reefer Fest in Baltimore on April 18th. And basically right now with the current chaos in the industry, we're really, really hoping to hit the road hard this summer. But that's kind of all up in the air until things are figured out a little bit.
Yeah, I see. Well, anyway, I hope it doesn't affect you guys too much. I'm planning on buying this album just to support you guys, and I encourage everyone that's listening to do the same.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Let's finish off with a message to the fans who want to listen to Volume 2 as soon as possible.
Yeah, to the fans. Yeah, pick it up. I hope you enjoy it. Yeah, we can't wait for you to listen to it.
Crank it up.
All right, guys, thank you so much for the interview. All the best with the new release, and I hope to see you guys here in Toronto at some point in time.
Yeah, we'd love to be back. I think we played up there a couple of years back with Telekinetic.
Yeah, we'd love to. We'd love to play it.
Loved it, yeah.
All right, looking forward to it. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Have a good one.
For our listeners out there, thank you for sticking around. Please show your support by following us on Twitter and Facebook and subscribing to our YouTube channel. This interview is available also on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and iHeartRadio. We're going to leave you now with the kick-ass song Driven by Hunger from the latest Hyborian album, Volume 2. Take care and crank it up.
Crank it up.
Yeah.